Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 156 of Sign Language. Apologies for the month-long delay or thereabouts. To tell you how long it's been, one of the first things that I have on my list to discuss was Rupert Neve's tribute to George Martin. And I think George probably died about, 5 or 6 weeks ago now. So that's probably slightly old news right now. But I figure, hey, you know, they are two of the serious heavyweights in, you know, in the realms of audio engineering. You know, George Martin, obviously, with his contribution to everything that the Beatles did and a whole bunch of other artists after that. And Rupert Neve, obviously, you know, should need no introduction. As a designer of hardware who's built some amazing consoles and a whole bunch of other stuff since then as well, you know, things like compressors and mic pre's and goodness knows what else. So I'll put that link in the show notes. Like I said, it's slightly old news now, but if you didn't see it at the time that George Martin passed away, then have a read. There's a couple of nice little, you know, personal moments in there that I quite liked it. Something that I did find only today, and which I posted on my Facebook page, which I thought was absolutely epic, was a video that I found on YouTube. It came up in my Facebook feed as, you know, somebody else had posted it as a link to, you know, one of those clickbait websites, which, you know, I followed the link, and as soon as I saw that it was an embedded YouTube clip, I just went straight to YouTube and closed the tab of the linkbait website. So I just grabbed the link directly to the YouTube video. It's called The History of Rock. I will do no more to explain it because I would not do it justice. Please, people, go and have a look at this thing. You can thank me later. It is amazing. And not just from an audio perspective, but the visuals are great as well. As I said on my Facebook wall, it's the kind of thing that once you've listened through it the first time, you'll want to go back and go through it a second time and freeze every frame so that you can watch all of the detail that's going on in the video. It is absolutely amazing. So yeah, definitely check that out. Something that was, I don't know why this came up, it sort of came into the forefront of my awareness about a month ago, and I thought I really need to discuss that on Sign Language. And I guess it's just me getting on my soapbox a little bit. And it's the issue of polarity versus phase. And it really, it's starting to bug me, and I don't know why. Obviously, I'm becoming a grumpy old man. I get really frustrated when I hear people refer to the phase switch on a console or on a mic preamp, right? Because in reality, it's not a phase switch. It's a polarity switch, and the two are really different, right? Polarity refers to the direction of the voltage fluctuation of an analog signal as to whether or not the voltage is going positive or whether it's going negative. So when you hit that switch, which has the little circle with a 45 degree line through it, which everybody refers to as a phase switch, what that really does is simply invert the values of the voltage, right? In the sense that the positive voltages become negative voltages and the negative voltages become positive voltages. So all it's doing is taking the waveform, if we think of the waveform in a visual sense, the way we're used to seeing it in, you know, any digital audio workstation, and simply turning it upside down so that the part of the waveform that's above the center line is now below the center line, and the bit that's below the center line is now above the center line, right? That is what polarity is. It's poles, right? North pole, south pole, except in the sense of audio engineering from an analog point of view, we're referring to the fluctuation of the voltage, right? When there's no signal, the voltage is at zero. Right, and there are positive voltages and negative voltages which create our analog waveforms. phase, on the other hand, refers to time. It's not just about polarity. It's about where the wave cycle is in relationship to time. And this is going to be a little bit difficult to try and describe in an audio-only context, but I want you to imagine a number line, right? And just imagine a number line that goes from 0 to 10, right? And imagine that at 0, you have a voltage of 0, right? And at number 1, along our timeline, we have a voltage of plus 1. Right, and then at the number 2 on the timeline, the voltage has fallen back to 0. And at number 3 along the timeline, the voltage is at minus 1. And then at 4 along our timeline, the voltage has come back up to 0. Right, so we've got a perfect sine wave broken down into four, you know, quarter cycles, if you like. Right, when we refer to phase, we need to be referring to two signals. There's no such thing as a phase error with only one signal. You've got to have two signals because any phase variation or phase relationship refers to how one waveform relates to another waveform. Imagine that you have two microphones that are picking up the same source of audio. Yeah, whatever that source of audio might be. You know, let's say it's a guitar and you've got, you know, a guitar amp and you've got two microphones in front of the guitar amp, right? Now, based on the distance from the speaker of the guitar amp to your microphones, there can be a phase relationship where the sound reaching the second microphone might be slightly delayed due to distance in relationship to the time that it takes for that sound to go from the speaker to the diaphragm of the first microphone. And what that might result in, if we go back to our, you know, visual of a number line, is that nothing happening at 0. At number 1, our voltage is still at 0. At number 2, it's now gone to plus 1. At 3, it's back to 0. At 4, it's at minus 1. And at 5, it's back to 0. So what we've got is this second waveform that is 90 degrees out of sync with the first waveform. You know, I hope you're following me on this. Just draw it out. Listen to what I said and draw it out. Right? And obviously, as you increase distance, then that increases the time delay between the signal reaching one microphone versus reaching the other microphone. And the longer the time delay, then the greater the phase shift of the second waveform relative to the first waveform, okay, as heard by the first microphone. And it's just, I don't know why, but it's really starting to bug me when I hear people talk about, oh, hit the phase switch. It's not a phase switch, because a phase switch refers to time. All that is a polarity switch. So it's, I don't know why, but I'm struggling to comprehend how we are this far down the road of audio engineering. You know, we've got to be looking at close on 100 years of, you know, professional audio engineering now, if not more. And we still haven't got this terminology correct. Like, there's been enough guys who've spent their careers in this who have to be aware of this. And yet, why do we still refer to that switch as a phase switch? If any of the other, you know, experienced engineers who listen to this podcast want to weigh in on this, I'd love to hear your thoughts. But it seems to me that that is just a crazy setup that we still refer to as a phase switch when it's a polarity switch. Anyway, I will get off my off my soapbox now. Oh, hey, listen, I meant to mention this at the beginning of the podcast too. If my computer seems a little bit noisier tonight than it normally is, it's because I've got the side of the case off because I'm rendering video at the moment and my machine gets a little bit hot. So I've taken the side of the box off to allow a little bit more airflow in over the CPU while it's rendering video. The motherboard keeps on flashing warning signs at me saying CPU temperature is 65 degrees centigrade. Which apparently is hot. So anyway, so if you're hearing a little bit more background noise than you would normally hear on this podcast, my apologies. That's why. last episode, I talked about a voiceover guy who is now deceased, a guy called Ray McGregor, and I did say that I would post some samples of Ray's promo work. And I completely forgot it. I obviously didn't make a note of it in my text document. So when I came to do the show notes, I somehow just completely forgot all about having made that promise. And of course, Rob Bettler sent me an email and went, yeah, I found this link and I think this is the guy. And, you know, I'm still waiting to hear some stuff that you promised. So my apologies, Rob. I noticed that the link that you included in your email is to the Ray McGregor Audio Shrine, which Bill Weaver set up on SoundCloud. And I work with Bill. He works at the same radio station I do. And if you have a look at that entire SoundCloud playlist, you'll find a whole bunch of different stuff. There's a few tracks there that are attributed to me, and then there are three that are not attributed to me, and having just had a listen to them, I probably shouldn't even admit to it. But the tracks which are titled Best Music Mix 1, Best Music Mix 2, and Better Music Variety, which were all from Snowy Mountains 2XL in Cooma, they are also mine, even though they're not attributed to me. But yeah, have a listen to Ray's promo work. It's interesting, you sent me the link of his on-air stuff, and I'd never heard Ray on air. He sounds totally different when he's doing, yeah, or when he was doing on-air stuff, like completely different sound. And he sounded so ocker, which is really amazing, because when you hear him in, you know, promo mode, he had, I don't know, I guess he kind of reverted back to his English roots. Like, he sounded a little bit English, but in that kind of generic international traveler kind of way, you know, that, you know, people who travel a lot tend to lose, you know, whatever accent they had from the country of origin that they came from. You know, they tend to pick up this sort of what I refer to as the international accent. It's, you know, it's got like traces of this and traces of that and traces of something else, and it's not readily identifiable as English or Australian or American or whatever, you know. So yeah, it was interesting to hear his on-air stuff. I'd never heard any of that before, so yeah, there you go. Awesome. The final thing, actually, no, there's another email from Rob that I will address, and that was he sent me an email called Sony's Glorified Gimmicky Contactless Audio. And this is what Rob had to say.
Hello, dear Audio Yoda. Here's a few quick notes on two newly released products. Same rules apply. If it's too crappy, feel free to disregard. Project N. Guess what? So Sony wants to relive its past glories with, quote, innovative, unquote, prototype products such as this. Project N. In a nutshell, you wear that device around the neck and never on top of your head while it broadcasts private audio to your ears without the need to wear earbuds.
Now, I'll include in the show notes, obviously, the link to the article on The Verge, which Rob sent me. So the idea of this product is, imagine the shape of a set of headphones, like a headband that girls would wear, but without the ear, you know, the big round ear pads, and this, instead of sitting over the top of your head, sits around your neck with a couple of speakers at the ends of the arms that fire up towards your ears. So the idea is that you have nothing in your ears. You're hearing this sound directed up to your ears, and it doesn't bother anybody else. No one else can hear it. Interesting concept. Sony had these on display at South by Southwest earlier this year. Be interesting to see whether they take off. Apparently, they're not the first to market. LG have had a couple of different products of a similar nature, not exactly the same. The link that Rob sent me to the LG product, it actually had traditional in-ear noise isolating type earbuds embedded in the end of it, and they just actually pull out on retractable cables. So not quite the same thing, Rob, but I see what you mean. Like, it's similar design with the whole round the neck type thing. Interesting concept. It would be interesting to hear whether or not this, you know, this concept of these speakers in the ends of the little horseshoe-shaped device that you ring, you know, wear around your neck, whether or not they do, you know, what they promise to do, which is, you know, direct sound up to your ears without bothering the rest of the planet. Anyway, we'll wait and see. I'll put the links that Rob's included in his email into the show notes for anyone that wants to check them out. And the last thing that I wanted to discuss is I finally got Dave kind of revved up and focused on getting some music done. You know, it's been 5 years since I moved out of Sydney and up to Gosford. And in that time, Dave and I have pretty much done nothing together. He's recorded a bunch of stuff by himself, and occasionally he'll send me some stuff to mix. But what I find is that when he records by himself, he's not as hard on himself as I am on him as a producer. And so the quality, you know, in terms of performance is not quite the same. And he has admitted he finds it difficult to be engineer as well as artist. And I completely understand that. That makes perfect sense. And because he's not an audio engineer 40 hours a week like I am, the technical side, you know, the engineering side doesn't come as naturally to him as it does to me. So it requires a lot more focused attention for him to get that stuff right than it does for me, where, you know, it's all just second nature now because I've been doing this for 30 years. So anyway, we've been talking and I was saying, dude, we got to start doing some music again. Otherwise, I'm going to top myself, yeah, because I'm missing, you know, having stuff to mix. And some things have happened, and he wrote a couple of songs, and we've suddenly just got this energy going again where he's now really focused, absolutely committed to getting not just one album, but two albums out this year. I don't know whether we will get two albums out, but I can honestly say that, yeah, we will get an album out this year for sure. And I don't want to let too much of the cat out of the bag, but Dave's been learning about MIDI. He's bought himself Kontakt, which is a great sampler. It's, yeah, phenomenal piece of software. So I'm kind of learning that. He's learning it. And sonically, this whole album is going to be quite a departure from the stuff that we've done in the past, which has always been very clean and, yeah, I want to limit how much I say, but what I did want to address was how much I have embraced this concept, which I think I heard about this concept originally on that epic thread on the Reaper forum by Yep, "Why Your Recordings Sound Like Us." And it was this whole notion of a little bit of distortion or overdrive on multiple tracks within a mix can have just this amazing effect to gel things together. And it's not something I've ever been comfortable with trying in the past, but we've mixed three songs for this new album already. And this is all like, you know, when I say we've found some energy, I mean, this has all happened in the last 4 weeks, where Dave's tracked these three songs, two of which are brand new, you know, songs that he's just written, and one of them's an old track that we never did anything with. And he's really excited about where this project is going. I'm really excited about where it's going sonically. And so he sent me these, you know, tracks one at a time to mix. And I took this approach of, let's just give this a go. Because of the nature of this album, how it's going to sit sonically, it made sense for me to experiment a little. And so I have a full licensed version of Isotope Trash 2. And because Dave bought Native Instruments Complete version, well, he bought 9, then he bought the upgrade to 10, and now he's bought the upgrade to 10 Ultimate. And Native Instruments allow up to 5 installations with any purchased licensed version. So Dave was able to give me all the installed discs and say, you know, hey, install this on your machine. That way we can exchange Reaper projects and we'll both have the, you know, the set of plugins. And so there's some distortion and drive plugins within the Native Instruments suite as well. And so I've been taking this approach of just tiny little hints of distortion or drive on various tracks. And I've got to say, I am absolutely blown away with what it can do for a mix. So if you are in the process of ever mixing music, I would say, don't be shy. Give this a go. I'm having a ball. I really am having a ball with it. And when Dave is comfortable with me to do so, what I'll do is I will do an episode of this podcast where I will grab one of those songs and I'll disable all of the drive and distortion from, you know, the mix that I've done, and let you hear the song as it would have sounded had there not been any distortion or drive on all of the tracks. And then I'll let you hear the actual mix that's, you know, going to end up on the album, which will have had, you know, all sorts of little bits of distortion just added here and there. And I'm talking everything, to drums, to guitars, even to vocals. But we're not talking massive amounts here. We're just talking little bits, just enough to put a, you know, bit of a fuzz on the signal. And it's amazing how, when added together, all these things just make a massive difference to the way a mix just gels. I'm blown away. It's one of those things where you go, you know, you read about this, you know, years ago, and then completely push it aside and think, nah, that's not for me. And then one day you wake up and go, oh, I'll give that a go. And then just get totally blown away by the results. So, yeah. If any of you have already done it, love to hear your thoughts on it. If you are mixing music yourself and you have never tried it, I'd love you to give it a go and let me know what your thoughts are. It doesn't have to be trash. It could be any, you know, any distortion plugin should do, as long as it has the ability to do subtle. And that's the thing I love about Isotope Trash. You know, you can go to all points of the compass, you know, from the most subtlest, you know, pretty much inaudible effect, all the way to absolutely destroying the signal to the point where you can't even hear what the input originally was. And you can customize it in so many ways. I love the plugin. It's absolutely fantastic. Anyway, that is my meanderings and ramblings for this episode. Sorry, it was a bit of a mixed bag, but hopefully that was interesting. And yes, if you haven't yet, please go find that link to the History of Rock video on YouTube. That is just amazing. All right, until I speak with you next, take care. Oh, one last addendum before I sign off. You will have noticed there's a new top and tail to the podcast, and I would like to thank Sam Phelps, guy I used to work with at the Australian Radio Network, who created this entire library of sound design elements, which I used for all the crazy sounds you hear in the top and tail. So big thanks to Sam for that. All right, catch ya.
Sign language.
Another audio2you.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email studio@audio2you.com.